couch of potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films, The Lego Movie 2, What Men Want, Cold Pursuit, The Amityville Murders, The Prodigy, and the Oscar-nominated shorts. I'll also be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring the mermaid Lake of the Dead. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The first piece of news is a sad piece of news. We have to bid farewell to Albert Finney. He died this week at age 82. Now, this guy has had a long career, and he kept his career in terms of recognizable roles all the way up until just a couple of years ago. Earlier in his life, he was known for doing movies like Tom Jones, and he did Scrooge back in the early 70s. He was on Murder on the Orient Express, played Hercule Poirot in the Sidney Lumet version of it. But later on in his life, he did other films that were just as big and notable. He was in two of the Bourne movies, The Bourne Ultimatum and The Bourne Legacy. He also was in the film Big Fish, the Tim Burton movie that, of course, got adapted into a stage production. He was in Aaron Brockovich, opposite Julia Roberts in her Academy Award-winning role. He was in Ocean's 12, and he was also in Skyfall. So, I mean, he's done a bunch of these big movies. He was also in Breakfast of Champions. I never hold that against him. Oh, that's one of my favorite books of all time by Kurt Vonnegut, one of the worst movie adaptations I've ever seen. He was in that. He played Kilgore Trout. And for those who know I have a placard of a famous Kilgore Trout saying in my living room, which I can't say on the radio. But Godspeed, Albert Finney. You will be missed, and you had some fantastic roles. The next piece of news is one that's really kind of dominated the news cycle this week, and I think it's been a slow week for news in entertainment. And this has been sort of unfortunate for Liam Neeson, because the narrative in Spin is whether or not Liam Neeson is a racist. And it's one of those sort of manufactured stories, because it's a reaction to a comment he made, and then reactions to that, and then outrage, I think, because people are in general bored. And it's made enough news sites, and because he has that movie Cold Pursuit coming out this week, everyone's got him in the forefront. Apparently, if you don't know the background, he was asked during a junket, during a press interview, how he found the motivation to play a guy going out for revenge in Cold Pursuit, which, by the way, he's done revenge plenty of times before. But he tells a story about how when he was younger, a friend of his was raped, and it was a black man that had done it, but they never caught him. And so what he did was he took a weapon and would walk around basically black neighborhoods near where he lived, hoping to run into somebody ready to start trouble or something like that. Nothing happened from it, but he went out there with that intent. And then after four or five of those times he went out, he realized how terrible of an idea it was. And he had regret for doing it. He felt bad for doing it. He expressed remorse for doing it. He realized how unlikely it would have been to actually run into that guy at that time. He realized how dangerous it was, not just for somebody else, an innocent person possibly, but also for him. And he stopped doing it, and he learned from that mistake. But of course, people hinged on that as saying, oh, he went after black people, which he didn't. Okay, let's explain this the way it is. What he did was wrong. Absolutely, it was wrong. Taking a weapon and going into a neighborhood looking for trouble is a bad idea. But here's the catch. Nothing actually came of it. There were no injuries. There were no attacks. There were no anybody hurt or killed or even scratched in this scenario. He learned from his mistake. He has expressed regret, and he has changed. He doesn't go walk around neighborhoods now looking for trouble. This was some stupid thing he did way in his past. And people are blowing it out of proportion. People are calling for him to be digitally removed from Men in Black, the international movie that's coming out, which is ludicrous, because you see, and this is what happens when you remove Kevin Spacey out of something like All the Money in the World, Everyone's like, we need to do that with anyone we take any sort of offense to. Look, if we're going to litigate people for stuff they didn't do, you gotta put everybody in the guilty basket on that one. There is nobody who hasn't had some form of anger or intent or wanted to do something really bad, whether it's racist or whether it's just violent or whether it's inappropriate. Everyone has those thoughts. Everybody has that urge to lash out. But what makes us human is we have a conscience that stops us from doing that. We have a moral code that gets in our way or tells us we're going down the wrong path. People say, well, he's racist because of some stupid thing he did in the past that really was motivated more by anger, and he just identified a suspect and he inappropriately profiled everyone else by it, but he didn't act on it. He acted on it in the sense that he went into these neighborhoods, but he didn't do anything. He didn't like go take anybody out. And if we're going to suddenly ruin a guy's career, toss him out to the cold, that's overkill. And this goes to the greater thing of saying, is he racist? And look, racism is not something that it's like you either have a card and you turn it over and it says, yes, you're racist, or no, you're not. There are people that are clearly full on racist. David Duke, for example. You know, Grand Wizard of the KKK, I am pretty confident calling that person a racist. A lot of other people, there are experiences and cultural things that happen and reactions to things. And there are certain things that some people consider would be, racist or have a history in racism, but people don't understand. A great example, if you refer to the biggest bedroom in your house as the master bedroom, that is a racist term that comes from slavery. Just because you've used the term master bedroom does not mean that you're a racist. The whole blackface controversy, and I'm not talking about the politicians right now. I'm talking about like Robert Downey Jr. did a movie 10 years ago called Tropic Thunder where he wore blackface. Is he a racist? Well, I don't know. Is he? Was he dressed up like the Al Jolson blackface, or was he playing a character? There's in one of the short films I'm going to be talking about later, there's a character who appears in black makeup for a very specific racial reason. Is that because he has that on in that movie? Does that make him a racist? Is that in fact blackface? That's a big question. So forgive people for their past, especially for stuff they didn't do. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first movie I want to hit is Hobbs and Shaw. Opens on August 2nd.
Our target's name is Brixton. He's a ghost. We're gonna need the best trackers in the business. Luke Hobbs.
I'm what you call an ice cold can of whoops.
Career lawman. Always gets his guy. We're gonna need to operate outside the system. Deckard Shaw.
I'm what you might call a champagne problem.
If we stand a chance against Brixton, you guys have to work together.
No way.
This is a spinoff on the Fast and Furious franchise, and I know there are people who are huge fans of the Fast and Furious franchise. I don't know how this movie's gonna do, because it takes the characters of The Rock and Jason Statham and kind of have their own little buddy action movie. The problem is, it's like the bad guy's Idris Elba, and he's like a superhero in this. I mean, they've completely abandoned Fast and Furious have having even the remotest pragmatic reality. And then they've taken it and gone even outside of reality from a Fast and Furious movie. Plus, it's opening in August. So August has had some big movies like Suicide Squad or Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. But it's generally not considered the tentpole release that like July would be. The next one I want to hit is Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. Opens on August 9th.
This summer from Guillermo del Toro. Based on the iconic book series.
We're next.
Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
That was the Super Bowl spot, or a bunch of them kind of mashed together. I'm looking forward to this one just because it looks like it might be a fun, scary movie. I've never read the book series. I was a little too old for that. It was kind of like the generation younger than me. But overall, I'll get behind anything that Guillermo del Toro produces as a horror film. That is it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the Amityville Murders, The Prodigy, and Cold Pursuit.
Mm-hmm.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews. The first one is The Amityville Murders. This thriller looks at the life of the DeFeo family who lived in the Amityville house and kicked off the whole string of horrible events.
I see the end coming. A terrible, beautiful end.
The house, it makes things happen. Bad things.
I heard something in my room.
What did you hear, son?
It sounded like voices coming from my wall.
Something different happened down there the other day.
One of the things with the Amityville Horror is I know it's a classic, but I have never considered it a great movie, the original Amityville Horror. I've never read the novel, which is a novelized account of the Lutz family's experience. But I even remember as a kid in high school, like when I was in high school in the late 80s, and the Amityville Horror was about, I don't know, the movie was about 10 years old at the time. The murders were about 15 years old at the time. And I remember watching it back then and not being terribly impressed. I mean, you hear all the stories of like, oh, it's the house that had blood dripping from the walls and the Get Out sound from when Rob Steiger goes in as the priest. But I've never been all that impressed with the original Amityville Horror. And I even remember, I've given it a try over the years. I've rewatched it a couple times. It's never been, in my opinion, certainly not in terms of 70s horror movies, the most powerful one. It just, the house looks great and it has such a notorious story behind it. The remake was terrible. Back, what, in 2005, they over-sensationalized it, but I am still fascinated by the story behind the story. And this movie tells the story of the DeFeo family. Now, if you remember the beginning of Amityville Horror, it's the murders that take place before the Lutz family move in. The Lutz family was like the James Brolin and Margot Kidder family who had the kids that move into the house, and then they leave in 28 days. But these are the murders that happen initially. So if you know who the DeFeos are and you know their fate, you're like, you're watching this movie and it's showing the family and you're like, well, this is not going to end well for anybody in here. Interesting note, Diane Franklin, who plays the daughter in the second Amityville Horror movie back from the 80s, which kind of in its own way is a version of what happened with the DeFeos. She played the daughter. I've always been a huge fan of Diane Franklin. Going back to, you know, like Better Off Dead, and she was in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. She plays the mom in this one. She plays Mrs. DeFeo in this one. I mean, she's gotten older, yeah, sure, but she still looks nice. I like I said, I'm a huge fan of hers. And that's a nice little connection to the original Amityville Horror stories. This movie itself, in some ways, is very well done. Even though if you know the grisly end, you can get into it in the terms of it showing the breakdown of a family and what the family looks like from the outside versus what the family's like on the inside, how the dynamic of the family is. And what's interesting is if you know the history of like post-murders, like all the reconstruction of events from Ron DeFeo, and how his story has changed, you're like, oh, I can see where this could lean into different versions of the story of how it's told. So in the character moments, it's actually kind of good. It's intense. It's depressing because we all know what happens to the DeFeo family. Where I have some problems with it is this is a production. It's a small budget production and they use digital effects when they really shouldn't. I can't tell whether the house is digitally created. It might be digitally created, but there's a lot of digital rain in this movie, and the digital rain looks terrible. And there's like scenes where some things levitate, and you can do some of that okay, but they kind of are, it's almost like, ooh, we can really get the money shot, but if you don't have the big budget behind it, it just kind of looks terrible. So they have these great ideas at times for staging, framing work, and scenes, but they it just comes out looking like a student film because the CGI is really kind of subpar. If they would have stuck to in-camera effects, I think this would have been a much more intense movie and it would have been much more effective. Still, I have to say, I did like looking at a story about the DeFeos and what started off this whole Amityville Horror sequence. So I'm going to have to say that the Amityville murders in the end kind of rock.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. I'm not really going to talk about The Prodigy. I'm not going to play a trailer. I'm not going to review it. It wasn't screened. I'm probably going to catch it this week, and I'll maybe talk about it next week. Maybe I'll get a review. I've just got too many other things to talk about. This is that Taylor Schilling movie. It's about an evil kid. Of course, we've seen plenty of evil children movies going all the way back to The Bad Seed back in the 60s when that came out. So I'm not going to talk about that one. I will talk about Cold Pursuit, though, because I want to talk about the Liam Neeson film. Liam Neeson stars as a snowplow driver whose son is killed by drug dealers, so he goes on the warpath to seek revenge.
Kyle's dead. Tell me what happened.
He got mixed up with some drug dealer. Viking. He likes hurting people.
What is it with all these nicknames? Speedo, Viking, Eskimo.
It's a gangster thing.
Did you have a nickname?
Wingman.
Gonna kill him. No, those guys.
One guy can disappear. Two, who wants me dead?
Three of Viking's drug dealers have disappeared.
What makes you think you can kill a man?
And that isn't a crime novel.
First of all, I can watch a Liam Neeson revenge movie any day of the week. I love those things. I think he's fantastic in those roles. I think that's kind of what his legacy is going to be. And to the point earlier in the show, when I was talking about, you know, the racism and is he a racist for what he was doing or what his intent was, you also have to look, if you watch this movie, you understand, okay, this is where sort of that blind rage comes from. If you look at the character in the movie, he's acting irrationally, illogically, and irresponsibly in the movie. And the question that prompted this whole discussion to Neeson was, what's ever caused you to act like that? How did you find that motivation? And he's telling about a time when he acted irrationally, illogically, and irresponsibly. And as I'm watching this movie, I'm like, okay, I can totally see where that's how he got in his headspace. And so he was whipping up the emotion of the character. That's what actors do. And I thought that it was very effective in this one. The other thing with this movie is it's very Norwegian. It's based on an original Norwegian film from 2014. And I've not watched a ton of Norwegian cinema, but I've seen enough to watch this movie and go, gosh, this really feels Norwegian. With Norwegian movies, there's a real heavy tone to them. It's often very dark and depressing and bleak and very monotone or monochromatic because of all the snow and gray. But it also has a certain degree of humor, a very dark humor, and it's sometimes hilariously shocking moments in this movie that almost seem out of place, that don't seem to even fit, or you don't understand what the purpose is. The movie captures that, and I have a certain appreciation for how gutsy it was to make this movie that is very starkly and heavily Norwegian that I don't think anybody in America is going to get. Now, when it comes to the rest of the movie, Cold Pursuit works to a degree. The revenge part works, but then it kind of turns in the middle and spins away from that and turns into sort of like gang warfare type stuff. That, to me, was less interesting. I was more interested in Liam Neeson hunting all these people down, but the movie becomes something else halfway through, so it's less satisfying the last half. But overall, it's an interesting film with some not-so-great characters outside of Liam Neeson's. Still, I'm going to have to say Cold Pursuit kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Lego Movie 2, the second part, and What Men Want. Back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about the latest new one, and that is The Lego Movie 2, the second part. After Bricksville falls into the apocalypse, Emmett and his friends have to fight an alien intruder.
A lifetime has passed since the horrific events of Taco Tuesday. This new life has toughened and hardened us all.
Two copies, please. One black, one with just a touch of cream and 25 sugars.
Emmett, you gotta stop pretending everything is awesome. It isn't.
Yeah, I get it.
Oh, no.
Bring me your fiercest leader.
This guy?
First of all, I have to remind everybody how much I love the first Lego movie. That thing stole my heart. I remember taking my kids, and I can't believe it was 5 years ago, but 5 years ago, and I do the math with my kids and think, oh my gosh, they were this age at that time. And I took all of them to go see it, and we saw it on a Saturday morning. I love that movie. I thought it was fantastic. It was way better than I thought it was going to be, even just based on the trailers, which I thought were clever. It made my year in terms of watching movies. It was a revelation. It was so perfect. And I think one of the things that made the first Lego movie so amazing is no one expected it to do as well as it did. And I think that's because they said, well, it's a kid's movie and it's an animated film. And yeah, those things can do well, but it is just a kid's movie. And then it did super well because it connected with the audience. It connected not just with children who played with Legos now and the mini figurines, but it connected with people like my age. At the time I was in my mid 40s back then, I guess. And that movie was something that touched something in my heart and nostalgia for me when I played with Legos long before those mini figurines came out. And not only was it because of the Lego set, but also all the pop culture references and like the superheroes and the Star Wars references. It just pushed all those buttons for me and it made it fantastic. And I think that's why it reached such a big audience, because so many people play with Legos and so many people get those pop culture references. And it's done in a clever way. So when that first Lego movie came out, it did so much better than I think they were expecting. And then they said, we're going to do a Lego Batman movie, which was a lot of fun. Didn't do as well as I think they were hoping, but it was still a really great little movie. They did the Lego Ninjago movie, which started to make them jump the shark. And not because of the Lego connection, but because nobody who's over 11 years old cares what Ninjago is. I didn't even know what Ninjago was because I've never seen anything like that. That's why those movies sort of had diminishing returns. And so they bring in this back to have the Lego sequel, which has the same characters from the first one and has all the pop culture references. Of course, you got Batman back in it and you've got the Justice League. Of course, they're hewing it down to the Warner Brothers owned properties, or at least the Warner Brothers associated properties. For example, they have a little Doctor Who reference in there, which the Warner Brothers has the distribution for DVDs and Blu-rays of Doctor Who in America. So they're less referencing Star Wars, and there's less reference to any sort of Marvel heroes. It is very much centering it on DC and Warner Brothers properties. But still, you have all that stuff that made the first movie great. You had like great little music. You had the great pop culture references. You had the irreverence. You have the silliness. You have the comedy. You have the voice cast, and it all totally does work. With that said, it reminds me a little bit of the Wreck-It Ralph sequel, because I liked the first Wreck-It Ralph a lot. I thought that was fresh and unique and different. And the Wreck-It Ralph sequel that we had last November was still a fun little movie, but it did feel forced. And it felt like they were trying for a sequel, which happens a lot when you have a self-contained movie. When you tell a story and then they say, we need a sequel. Well, do you need a sequel or do you want a sequel? And there's a big difference between that. And I feel that that's what was driving the Lego movie. There's parts of this that seem forced. Like, for example, it's impossible to explain the story of this movie because they keep going in and out of the real world versus Lego. Whereas in the original Lego movie, it's all in the Lego universe until they pop out at the end. Well, of course, you know that that's the thing that happens in there. So that's a little bit wonky and not as steady. It does feel forced. Some of the humor is a little bit forced, and it doesn't fit together much as a story does. Also, there's a lot of musical breaks to it, and I get why they do that, because I know that that's kind of a big thing that people like to do. But there was a certain point where I'm like, do we need another song and dance number? I mean, like, Everything Is Awesome at the beginning of the first movie was great, but they didn't stop every 10 minutes to have a big production number. As much as music was critical to that movie, I think that was overkill in this sequel. But still, it's a fun movie, and it absolutely works as a sequel. I think they sort of have mined where this can go with the actual pragmatic story, but still, it's a fun little movie. It's totally worth checking out. So I'm going to have to say the Lego Movie 2, the second part, rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the movie What Men Want. After drinking a so-called magic potion, a female sports agent discovers she can hear men's thoughts and decides to use this to her advantage.
I'm so sick of this boys' club.
Every day is pick day.
You don't connect well with men.
I know someone you should talk to.
I can help you connect with men. Why don't we have some tea?
I feel weird after last night.
Yeah, that's what happens when tequila meets desperation.
Okay, stop saying things you shouldn't be saying to your boss.
Holy crap, can you hear my inner thoughts?
I can hear your inner thoughts!
Weren't you complaining about men trying to keep you down?
This is a loose remake of the 2000 movie What Women Want, which starred Mel Gibson and Helen Hunt, directed by Nancy Meyers. And first of all, that movie is a charming little movie. And part of the reason behind that is because of Nancy Meyers. Nancy Meyers is, in my opinion, at least until, you know, she doesn't produce a whole lot, but through her run through the 90s and the 2000s, I thought she's probably the best female director that's out there. I think she just is very good at what she does. She tells these great stories and she has these very likable characters. I've liked almost everything she's done. And the last movie she did, I think, was that one with Anne Hathaway and Robert De Niro. But overall, I think her everything from the stuff that she arguably kind of directed, like with Charles Shire, her ex-husband, like Father of the Bride, all the way up to now, I think she's one of the best directors. Adam Shankman, who directs What Men Want, not as good of a director. He has some funny stuff, but he also has some pretty awful things too. Now, when it comes to this, they just basically gender swap and they give the role of the woman who gets to read men's minds. And parts of it work. It does. It's not as sweet or as charming as the original. The other thing is this is R-rated. And it's really R-rated for some language and some crass references and maybe a little bit of a, I mean, even the sex that they have in there is not terribly graphic. So it feels like it's a PG-13 movie masquerading as an R-rated movie. It could have easily been PG-13, but I guess they said, let's do it R-rated so we can throw in some F-bombs and maybe get an adult audience. I think they're going for counter-programming for the Lego movies that should roll over into Valentine's Day as maybe a date movie. But overall, the movie has its moments. It's cute at times. Taraji P. Henson's good in it, but I feel that she's being squandered by Hollywood. Now, if she's in a movie like, say, Hidden Figures, where she's got this ensemble of great actors and actresses around her, they usually give her good stuff. But in a movie like this, where she is basically the anchor star and the whole reason the movie's being made, she's way better than the material they give her. And that's a shame, because Taraji P. Henson is a fantastic actor and could do a lot. But the fact that I don't think she's getting very good roles for herself in terms of being able to carry a movie, not a problem with her, but that's maybe more a problem with the people she works with or her handlers or just Hollywood in general, not wanting to give a woman or not even knowing how to market her. And that's a shame, because if this is the best that she's going to have, it's not good. But as just a throwaway counter-programming movie, it's okay. So I'm going to have to say What Men Want kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
And that's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the Oscar-nominated shorts, the box office, and the home cinema roundup featuring The Mermaid, Lake of the Dead. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews with something that's one of my favorite things to do every year. And that is to take a look at the Oscar-nominated short films. Now, in the past, you'd never see these. You might see one in the theater, like if it was a Winnie the Pooh short that was attached in front of another Disney movie. But in the past, you never got to see these. They were specialty programming that you might be able to see at a festival or maybe some shorts block at some sort of exhibition. But now, with the way theatrical distribution is and digital distribution and with on-demand online distribution, you can. I've always loved short films, not just the animated stuff, although the animated stuff's great because a full feature-length animated film is so expensive. Sometimes all you can do are the short ones. And I've always liked cartoons, but there's also innovative animation that isn't just like kids' movies. And when it comes to the live-action short films, those are brilliant pieces, and a lot of them are significant and powerful. Short films are a great breakthrough way to get through things. I also, if ever I go to a film festival, I always have to catch a couple shorts blocks, especially if I go to, like, when I went to Israel and I went to the Jerusalem Film Festival, I watched the short blocks because I said you can get a lot of culture and sampling of what movies are about by watching, you know, 3 hours of short films as opposed to spending 1-2.5 hour movie itself. So it's nice that there's an option for average people all across the country to see this.
3, 2, 1.
Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
I think it's healthy people who think about how they want to die and sick people who think about how they want to live.
These movies are being released in theaters this weekend. If you were to go to shorts.tv/theoscarshorts. You should be able to find where you can go see these movies. But if you can't and you have a little bit of patience, you can also wait until February 19th, which is in just about, what, less than 2 weeks, and they will be available on demand. But this way you can actually see what the Academy is voting for. Now, it's broken down in 3 blocks, but there's an animation block, and each one has 5 nominees. The animation block, the documentary block, and the live-action block. I have not had a chance to watch the documentaries, just due to time and other constraints, but those are very powerful, and the documentaries are always dealing with some sort of significant thing. I know there's one about Nazism and one about refugees and racial divides, and I think there's one about the end of life. So the documentaries always have some sort of social significance to it. Now, the live action shorts, they always run the gamut in terms of what they're sometimes they're more whimsical stories, but this year, all of them seem to have a significant subject matter. One of them called Skin from the US is about neo-Nazis and sort of weirdly trying to humanize them, but also show some horrible things that they do. There's one called Madre, which is from Spain, which is a one shot, almost completely one shot of a woman trying to track down her son who's lost on the cell phone. There's one called Marguerite, and there's another one called Fave, which are both French Canadian. And those are ones about an older woman and her relationship with her caregiver. And the other one's about 2 boys who get into trouble and something dangerous happens. And then finally, the one that I find that I think impacted me the most that I think should win the Academy Award is Detainment, which is from Ireland. And it's about, do you remember that story like 20 years ago about those 2 kids those 2 kids from Britain who abducted a 2-year-old child from a mall and murdered him? If you remember that story, it's about the investigation into them and the interrogations of them. And it's chilling to watch. And it's a realistic movie. Now, in terms of the animation, which is one of my favorites, the animation block isn't as strong this year as it has been. Now, of course, you always get the Pixar short and Bao, which is that one about the woman with the Chinese dumpling. And they, of course, have that, that was released in front of The Incredibles 2. So a lot of people have seen that one, but there's other ones. One's called Late Afternoon from Ireland, and this one is about an old woman trying to bring back the memories that she's lost. One called One Small Step, which is a USA-China co-production about a daughter of a father who is trying to get in the astronaut program and how he helps her. Weekends, which is a United States release, but it's multicultural by having I believe it's Japanese characters, and it's splitting the time of a child between the mother and father. And then finally, this one's my favorite. It's called Animal Behavior. It's from Canada, and it's essentially a therapy group with these animals dealing with each other. and basically assigning what would be considered problematic behavior of humans to things like leeches and praying mantises and dogs and cats and pigs and gorillas. And it's very funny, and actually is deeper than you would think from its just over the top silly presentation. So I don't care which one you see. I don't care whether you go live action, animation, or documentary. Never miss your chance to see the Oscar-nominated short films, because they are fantastic movies in and of themselves and are readily available now, either in the theater or in a couple weeks online. The Oscar-nominated shorts totally rock.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk a little bit about the box office. Not a whole lot to say, really. Last week's box office was very similar to the last couple weeks. Glass wins again, but that's because there wasn't anything big. Miss Bala did not do terribly well, like $7 million. I think it might eventually make back its money that it, because it was a relatively cheap movie to make. But this was one of those weekends where nothing made more than $10 million, and that almost never happens nowadays. Of course, this weekend, Lego Movie 2 is going to dominate the box office, so no worries there. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today's spotlight is on the Russian film The Mermaid, Lake of the Dead. A swimmer and his fiancée are haunted by a monstrous mermaid that lives in a remote lake.
Every time I close my eyes, I see her looking at me.
Roman saw a young woman at the lake.
That's impossible. She's dead. I met her once, and I can't forget her.
If you reject her, she will punish you and take away the woman you love.
Feeds on our love.
This came across my desk from Shout Factory, who does some great stuff. They do a lot of vintage releases. I talked about Cobra a couple weeks ago. This week, this is an import. It's a Russian film. And the reason I found this one interesting is because, yes, it's Russian and everybody speaks Russian, but it really feels like it's a Russian movie trying to do an American Cabin in the Woods horror movie. Because it literally has them go to a cabin in the woods by this lake where there's this mermaid that haunts around. And I don't know if it's a real Russian legend or not, but it feels like there's at least a certain degree of folklore involved in it. But of course, it's not making the mermaid into this beautiful, wonderful creature. It's a monster. It's almost a succubus in a certain way. And the film is rocky. It's uneven. The dialogue's not great, and especially if you go with the dubbed version of it, the dubbing's kind of terrible. I mean, the dubbing sounds like an old Japanese movie from the 70s. And of course, if you listen to the original Russian and then read the subtitles, that's going to give you a little bit better acting to it. But you can get by with the dubbing, even as bad as it is. And the characters aren't terribly deep, no pun intended, but I will say this about the movie. While it's an okay throwaway horror movie, and it's neat to see a Russian movie about horror that's not just completely horrible and nihilistic. I mean, it's nice to see something come out of that area of the world as an import horror movie and not be something like a Serbian film or something horrible that you can't stand to watch. It actually is kind of a mildly entertaining movie. I think this is the kind of film that if you were to remake it, a lot of times people say, oh, don't remake the movie, go see the original. This one I could see get an American remake and have it with a budget and some better actors and maybe a better script. But the general idea and story, I think this could actually be pretty good. So I'd love to see this imported as an American language remake. But in its original form, as it stands, The Mermaid, Lake of the Dead, kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
Other movies on DVD and Blu-ray this week include The Grinch, The Girl in the Spider's Web, The Cloverfield Paradox, The Sisters Brothers, and Widows. And that's it for this week. I will see you all next week when I'm going to be talking about Alita, Battle Angel, Happy Death Day to You, and Isn't It Romantic? Until then, have a fat time at the movies.